Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.
They work.
Matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Joe Haggerty, in for Zolak and Bertrand on the day after Christmas. And we are joined now by the MMQB's Burt Breer. You can follow him at on Twitter, at Albert Breer. And he's brought to us by Rockland Federal Credit Union, where free means free, free online banking and debit card, no minimum balance, and no monthly fee. Visit rfcu.com today to find a location near you. Burt, how you doing?
Yabby?
Yep, got you.
Hello, hey, Burt Breer.
Up, hey, what's up, guys?
Season's greetings, Burt.
You too, bud.
All right, Burt, so I guess we'll start with this Jim Gray interview with Tom Brady. Tom Brady repeating that he plans to continue playing at least through the 2019 season. So, I mean, just your thoughts. What do you make of that?
Well, he's been consistent about that. You know, I think if you want to really look at it, 45 isn't an arbitrary number. It's a number that, you know, his throwing coach, Tom House, gave Drew Brees, gave other quarterbacks a long time ago. That's how long they all believe that they're capable of playing if they do all the right things. And so, you know, that part of it, I think, is interesting. I think this becomes a little challenging for the Patriots is, once you get out of this year and you look at the lack of young talent coming up through the pipeline, the cap issues they're going to have with some of their older players where they're going to be bigger numbers, it's going to be very, very interesting how they operate knowing, you know, we've got a 42-year-old quarterback coming back here. And then, you know, how Brady's going to evaluate what they put around him, you know. And so those are still some things that I think – you know, you're going to have to go through and, you know, whether or not it affects your team building, I don't know. I think it certainly did affect their team building, having an older quarterback this year. And if they decide next year is the time to really start like a rebuild of the roster and start to, you know, look at getting a lot younger at different positions, it'll be interesting to see how Brady takes that. But obviously it's good news knowing that he at least plans to be back in the fold next year.
Burt, do you think the mentality for the Patriots is more of what you're talking about, you know, replenishing, reloading and rebuilding with younger players? Or is it more about knowing that the window with Brady is only, you know, going to be a year or two or whatever, and you should just be surrounding him with as much talent as you have because you don't know how competitive or how Super Bowl worthy you're going to be after he's gone?
Well, Hags, you know that those are competing things, and I honestly believe this, and I've said this a few times over the last couple of months. I think this was supposed to be the rebuilding year. Like, I think if you looked at their plans back in 14 and 15 after they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo, 2018 was probably going to be the year where they were going to blow it up and start to build around younger players the way they sort of were able to do in 2009 and 2010. Now, because you've got a 41-year-old quarterback, maybe you're hanging on to some players that you more aggressively would have looked to move after last season. Dante Hightower's got big numbers, probably got bigger financial numbers than, you know, what he's produced on the field. Rob Gronkowski, I think you can say the same thing now. Julian Edelman, you know, there are older players that I think would have merited a little bit of a harder look if you had a 27-year-old quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo rather than a 41-year-old quarterback in Tom Brady. And so that's no one's fault. I mean, like, look, you know, Tom Brady worked his ass off to play at an MVP level last year. And because he played at an MVP level last year, you know, that plan got thrown out the window. And I think they held on to some older players knowing, The window is here to win a championship with Tom Brady. Thing is, Hags, is that they didn't go all in on it, you know. And right. So they did trade Brandon Cooks away, and they did make some moves to sort of try to start the rebuilding process and draft. And I think to some degree it's hurt them that, you know, they've sort of tried to middle this, where they are holding on to some older players, but they're not going totally on all in on a year-to-year basis. The way you've seen some teams that have their quarterbacks on rookie deals right now, and I know it's a different thing, but the way you've seen a Philly or a Los Angeles go all in because they know they've only got their young quarterback on a rookie deal for so long, the Patriots didn't go all in that way, but they did, I think, hold on to some veteran players they may not have held on to otherwise, while trying to start the rebuild, and putting some resources into last year's draft class.
So you talk about older players, and obviously Rob Gronkowski would fall into that category. Another quiet game against Buffalo. So, I mean, what do you, first of all, make of that? And then what do you see him in terms of his future moving forward?
This is what he's been all year, guys. I mean, I there was a play on Sunday where I believe he was covered down the sideline by a backup linebacker, you know. Yeah. And he couldn't get loose of the guy. And this is the way, for the most part, teams feel comfortable treating him now. You know, he doesn't dictate coverage anymore. And there was a point 4 or 5 weeks into the season where, this really started. And where teams said, you know what, like, he can go up and he can make the circus catch. And if he does that on our DB or our linebacker, God bless him. But putting two or three guys on him is not going to change that. He's going to be able to make those catches in traffic. And otherwise, we feel pretty comfortable that he can't run past our guys. And for the most part, that treating Rob Gronkowski that way has worked for other teams. And that changes the math for everyone. You know, that changes how many people are rushing on some plays. That changes how other guys are getting covered on other plays. Just changes the math of the offense, you know, and how defenses approach you. And so, you know, I'll tell you this. I do not believe Rob Gronkowski will be back on the number he's slated to make next year. It's $10 million and $12 million on the cap. And I think, you know, when we get out of this season, whether it's after a divisional round playoff game, an AFC championship game, or the Super Bowl, we're going to hear the same things we were hearing last year, which is that he's mulling retirement.
How high is the concern level for Brady? Just given what he's looked like the last couple of weeks, you know, whether something's nagging him health-wise, whether this is what we've seen the last few years where there's a little bit of a fade down the stretch, you know, in the second half of the year. How much of a concern is there for Brady now as they, you know, get ready for the end of the regular season and the playoffs?
I mean, I think you have to be concerned about it, but he's battled through injuries in the past. I'd say this is probably a little more reflective of what's around him. I'm not saying he's the same player he was 3 years ago, but I think this is probably a little more reflective of the decline of players around him. You know, again, Gronk's not the same. I don't think Edelman's the same. Cooks isn't even here.
Yep.
You know, Josh Gordon's coming off the field. They really don't have anything on offense where you look at it and you say, that's going to keep the defensive coordinator awake on a Saturday night. And again, like, that changes the math of everything. That changes how teams are playing them. You know, that changes the amount of hits Brady's taking. I mean, it's just that sort of thing metastasizes into to issues all over the place. And so, you know, I still think that Brady can play at a very, very high level. I think where things have to change naturally over the next couple of years, if he's still going to be a quarterback, is, you know, it's got to go from Brady can lift everyone else up around him to we need to start to help lift Brady up. And Brady's been able to cover up so many problems over the years, and he doesn't create margin for error. He is your margin for error, you know, and he's allowed you to get by with a lot less in a lot of different spots. I think now the focus has got to be on how can we do our best to support him as he gets a little bit older, because you have to account for the fact that you really are in unprecedented territory with a quarterback at this age. And I think, you know, to be fair, drafting Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel was probably the start of that plan, where, you know, maybe we start to see them build an offense that looks, I don't know, a little bit more like the offense that Mike Shanahan built for John Elway at the end of his career.
So obviously the offense hasn't looked the same for the Patriots this season, but you look at the standings, they're the 2 seed. They're likely in line for a bye in the playoffs here. And, you know, with the Chiefs playing the way that they have, you could see, you know, the Patriots realistically hosting an AFC championship game. Do you think they have enough offensively with Gronk looking the way he did, Josh Gordon now not with the Patriots anymore, to make a run here? Or do you think that ultimately they're a few weapons short?
It's hard for me to see them winning 3 games in a row, guys. Like, that's generally, I think, how you have to look at this. Like, that's how I look at the Ravens, right? Like, I look at the Ravens and I say, that looks like a really dangerous team, but can they win 4 games in a row with a rookie quarterback? I don't think that can happen, you know? So can they come up and pop somebody? Yes. Are they capable of doing it, you know, 3-4 weeks in a row? I don't think so. That's sort of how I look at the Patriots. Now, I can see them getting to the Super Bowl. It's hard for me to see them rattling off 3 wins in a row, you know, and I just, it doesn't look the same as it has the last couple of years. I don't know if there's like something you look at on their roster right now outside of quarterback and say that is a legitimate strength. Like, that is something that they do at a very, very high level when you compare it against other teams across the league. And so, I mean, look, if I'm another team, I wouldn't want to come into Gillette. If it's Houston and the Patriots in the divisional round, I'm probably picking the Patriots. And if the AFC Championship game is at Gillette Stadium, obviously they've got a very, very good shot to win. It's just when you look at the team and the totality of it, the way it's put together and everything else, and where they're at right now, where they've been the last couple of weeks, I think winning a Super Bowl with this group would probably rank right up there with 2001 as far as, you know, accomplishments and Belichick's career and doing more with less. And so that's sort of where they're at. Do they have a shot? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be playing home playoff games, you certainly have a shot. But I do think that this is not quite the team it's been the last few years.
Yeah. That being said, Burton, getting back to what we talked about earlier, let's say you're the head of football operations for the New England Patriots, and you can't really operate halfway with professional sports teams, right? Where you're, you know, trying to rebuild in one hand, but on the other hand, leave older pieces around for your quarterback. Yeah. Like, what would you do if you were at this juncture right now with this Patriots team as they head towards the end here?
I have to say, I do my best to go all in the next couple of years because you don't know what's on the other side of it. I mean, look, and I know this has never been the way Belichick's operated, and I wouldn't expect him to change after 18 years of doing it one way to a lot of success. Like, so, you know, and we even saw it last year. I mean, I think, you know, the Brandon Cooks trade, I mean, I think you'd love to have him on the roster right now, but the Brandon Cooks trade displayed discipline, the same discipline that's got them, you know, sort of sustained success that they've had over the last 2 decades, which, you know, it's, you know, okay, like Sammy Watkins got paid $16 million a year, Allen Robinson got paid $14 million a year. We can't pay Brandon Cooks at that level, but he's a better player than those guys because we've got Gronk making 10 and we've got Edelman making 5 and we've got Brady making 15, so we can't do that. You know, that sort of discipline created the sustained success here. I think the issue that you have now is you look at it and you say, we have no idea what's on the other end of this. We have no idea when we're going to be in position to draft because we usually don't draft high. We don't know when we're going to be in position to draft the next guy and how good that guy is going to be. We need to squeeze the most that we can out of what we've got left of the Tom Brady era because, you know, at the end of it, and you hate to say it this way, Hags, but it's at the end of the Tom Brady era, and you take that player off the roster, now all of a sudden you're just like everybody else.
Yep, yep.
All right, talking with Burt Breer, the MMQB. Follow him on Twitter, at Albert Breer. Burt, I just had a couple league questions for you quickly before we let you go. First, how many openings do you think there are going to be in the NFL? It seems like there's going to be a ton of jobs available. And then how much interest do McDaniels and Flores get here?
I'd say probably somewhere around 7 or 8. You know, I think there are going to be a couple teams that are going to pull back. Here's the reason why. Over the last, I'd say, going back to the beginning of the new CBA, so 2011, so over the last 8 cycles, there have been about 7 or 8 jobs changing a year. That means over the last 8 years, we've probably had, I think it's something like 60 or 65 coaching changes, right? Now think about how that saps the pipeline. That's 65 candidates coming through, and a lot of them have been spit back out, right? And so that's naturally really sapped the pipeline dry where, you know, I think a lot of teams are looking at this right now and doing a hard evaluation and saying, well, wait a second, you know, we've got this guy in-house and we like him, you know, but, you know, it looks like maybe we should make a change. Let's look at what's out there. And they're looking at what's out there and they're saying to themselves, well, wait a second, that's not better than what we already have. In fact, that's a huge part of what happened in Baltimore was the owner sat down and the owner said, why would I let John Harbaugh go when he's immediately going to be number one on everyone's list if we let him go? And then we're out looking at what pool of candidates. So I think that that sort of dynamic could get a couple coaches a stay of execution. So I don't think the number will get quite to 10 like some people have predicted, but I think we'll safely get to where it's been the last couple of years, which is, you know, right there in the 7 and 8 range. And with, you know, Cleveland and Green Bay already having made changes at their spots, you know, that means probably 5 or 6 more coming next Monday.
All right, my last question here. Nick Foles just named NFC Offensive Player of the Week. He's going to be a free agent. So what type of market's he going to have? And then is there any situation if they go on another run here where the Eagles would go with Foles over Wentz?
I don't think so. Although getting back to the NFC title game or to the Super Bowl, and remember, they don't even control their own destiny right now. But getting back to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl would make things pretty interesting there. You know, and I think part of it is, you know, that the hype train on Wentz got going so fast that a lot of people didn't look at a lot of the things that the Eagles were doing to support him. And then you put a veteran quarterback in there, you know, who knows the game left and right. And, you know, it certainly has looked pretty good. They still believe in Wentz. They still believe Wentz is going to be the quarterback there for a long time. I think what they've learned the last couple of years is because of the injury history, they absolutely positively have to invest in backups. And I think the experience with Nick Foles taught them that. Remember, this is a guy who missed more than half of his last year at North Dakota State, too. And so, you know, I think in the end, you're going to see Foles somewhere else. Wentz is the Eagles starter in 2019. And again, you know, a pretty substantial investment in their backup. As for where he goes next, I think he's right in there with Joe Flacco on the 2019 quarterback market, which is, I think both those guys are a little bit, you know, kind of in the Sam Bradford category where if you're a team that's drafting a quarterback next year, they would be guys that you might bring in as a bridge guy and someone who's going to come in and say, okay, that guy can be our starter for a year, 2 years, if we need to sit our rookie. And that's turned out to be a pretty lucrative role for a lot of guys. You see Tyrod Taylor making $16 million in that role this year, and Bradford making $20 million in that role this year. So I think there's going to be money out there for those guys. But I think for guys like that, for your Flaccos and Foles, I don't think anybody's going to just put their whole operation behind them. I think it's going to be more, you come in, you're a bridge guy, you're our starter until we find our next guy, and then, you know, you'll start until the next guy's ready. I think Foles has at least earned that. And again, it's not a bad life to live, guys, when that's going to net you 15 to 20 million bucks a year.
No, that's not bad at all. All right, he is Burt Breer from the MMQB. Burt, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
$15 million a year to be a backup quarterback would be pretty nice.
I could hold a clipboard and wear a baseball cap for $15 million a year. Right? I could certainly do that.
That sounds like a good job.
I'd even take a few hits in practice, I think.
All right, he's Joe Haggard. I'm Tim McCone in for Zolak and Bertrand. More coming up after this.
Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song.
Oh. Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Joe Haggerty in for Zolak and Bertrand today. Just getting off the phone with Burt Breer in our last segment. Burt saying he thinks it's hard to imagine seeing the Patriots win 3 straight games in the postseason. So when you look at this Patriots team, and clearly it's not the same one we've used to seeing over the last few seasons. Gronk not the same. Some of the losses have just been very uncharacteristic, whether it's the Titans or, you know, the Lions certainly to start this year. Something just doesn't feel necessarily like it normally does with the Pats. But then you look at the standings, they're the 2 seed in the AFC. They could potentially have home field advantage throughout if the Chiefs get knocked off. What do you think, when you look at this Patriots team, what do you think the ceiling is?
I don't think it's Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they could, make it to the AFC Championship potentially. You just see them running up against a strong team, a physical team, a team that can run against them. You know, if Brady has an off day, makes a couple of mistakes like we've seen recently, they can absolutely be beat. And Bert nailed it, certainly, to the degree that any team, if they're coming into Gillette, that's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah.
They're going to feel like they have to take out, the champs or the traditional AFC power in order to get there. But I just don't think, whether it's offensively or defensively, I don't think this team is striking a lot of fear into anybody right now. And, they're a good team. I don't see great team what I've seen, especially now you start to hear, maybe they need to run the ball with Sony Michel more, and maybe they need to change the way they're doing things a little bit and, win in a different way than they've done recently. You start to do that on the fly, it tells you that there are problems that they're dealing with right now. And maybe they know, they're not going to be able to win it like maybe they did the last couple of times.
Yeah, you bring up running the ball. Mike Reese with an article a few days ago talking about how maybe the Patriots kind of switch up their offense and go with a different look than what we've seen.
Have to go with the old Antoine Smith, Corey Dillon type setup.
Yeah, well, look, they rushed for 273 yards against the Bills, right? And you look at it and you think, well, maybe that's the path for this team to get back to the Super Bowl. I'm with you, though. If that's the way you're going, I go back to the playoffs a few years ago, 2013, when they ran all over the Colts, and everyone said, you know what, you go into Denver and you run it with LeGarrette Blount, and that's the way it go, and that's the way you beat Denver. And then you get into a shootout instantly, and now you don't have – ultimately, when you say you're going to run the ball, that means you don't have enough weapons on offense to actually score and keep up with teams that actually do have a good offense.
And you better have an airtight defense that's getting turnovers, that's scoring, that's intimidating the other team and shutting them down. And, The Patriots, I think, are fine on both sides of the ball. I just don't see either one of them, the way they're playing right now, being dominant enough to take them through an entire postseason and win a Super Bowl. And, it starts to bring up questions about, what do they need to do better if they come up short, and what do they need to do differently if Brady's going to be here for another year or two, which I definitely think they need to do things a little differently than they did this past season, if and when that's the case, which it looks like it's going to be.
It's going to be interesting because when you look at teams that rebuild kind of on the fly, I look at the Saints, and they were kind of this middling franchise. Drew Brees is getting older, and then they hit a home run in the draft. They get Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, and then you're off and running again, right? But now, if you're the Patriots, building through the draft is tough too, because eventually you're going to have to use one of these high picks on your future quarterback. So it's like, you want to infuse all this young talent, but at the same time, you're going to have to use one of those picks on a quarterback. You don't have a ton of picks to begin with, too, so there's kind of this happy medium. When I look at the Pats this year, though, I'm with you. They're not the same team that we've seen, but I look at the path they would have in the AFC, and it's kind of there for the taking for New England to get back to the Super Bowl. And then once you're in the Super Bowl, it's like, yeah, they would obviously be underdogs to the Saints, but I don't know. I feel like anything can happen once you get there. And I look at this offense and look, Josh Gordon obviously was a huge loss, but I think that might be addition by subtraction in terms of the fact that I think we saw, especially with Tom Brady trying to get Josh Gordon involved in this offense,
trying to force it to him
early on.
Yeah.
You might get back to the old Tom Brady where, his favorite receiver is the open receiver. And maybe this offense actually takes a step in the right direction now that it's going to be kind of a by committee type of thing rather than just having that number one wide receiver that you're going to.
The great irony is in the year that the Patriots clearly aren't good enough to be the one seed in the AFC, it might actually be a tougher path to the Super Bowl by getting the one seed, because Kansas City, if everything, holds out the way that it is, Kansas City is likely going to get Baltimore or Los Angeles.
Yeah.
In the divisional round. Those two teams might be the best two teams in the AFC right now, for all we know. Like, that actually could be a tougher road. There is a legitimate chance that Kansas City gets knocked off in the divisional round if they play one of those two teams. I mean, that's not an easy out, either of those teams.
All right, and so then you wind up here with the...
Right.
Well, you wind up with the Texans, probably, and then after that, you win that game, and you're in the AFC Championship game again. And like you said, Kansas City gets knocked off, then you have a home game and you're ready to go. I don't know. It's interesting because you look at it, and certainly it's not the same team we've seen over the last couple seasons, but again, it's right there.
Can you see the Patriots, though, going into Kansas City
absolutely.
And winning AFC championship game in order to get to the Super Bowl? That's what I mean. Yeah. You know, you look at this team right now, and they're going to need other things to happen for them 100%. In order for them to, you know, go down the path and get towards the Super Bowl. And when you start doing that math and saying, well, if this happens and that happens, you're talking about a team that you don't have full confidence in that's just going to go out there, roll, take care of business, and get to where they need to go, which tells you there's weaknesses on this team. And, you know, I think that, you know, it was perfectly good regular season. They took advantage of the division again with still some familiar faces that have won in the past, all that stuff. But this year's Patriots team just does not feel like the last few years when you watch them out on the field every Sunday.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. A couple open lines. We'll get to your calls coming up next.
Boston, the greatest sports city in the world. Period. And this is Boston's home for the Bruins, Celtics, Patriots, and Revolution. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Joe Haggerty in for Zolak and Bertrand. Day after Christmas, talking Patriots with you guys. 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. Let's get back to the phone lines, and let's talk to Keith and Lowell. Keith, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. I know you've been talking a little bit about the draft. I just want to kind of call out Bill for not addressing the offensive skill positions over the past few years. I mean, look at some of the guys that have come out, you know, and it doesn't even have to be at the top of the first round, but guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, you know, these guys are all taken in the second round, and it seems kind of, I don't know, irresponsible of Bill to just neglect that position, and I think now we're really starting to feel it. So I just wanted to give you guys a take on that. I'll hang up and let you talk. Thanks.
All right, thanks for the call, Keith. I will say this. You know, a lot of people compare this season to 2009 and kind of when that was kind of when the bottom fell out and they kind of rebooted with Gronk and all those guys. But you look at it and the middle of the roster going in there, they had guys in their fourth, fifth year that were ready to make an impact, like Rob Ninkovich was on that team, things like that. And you look at this roster, there aren't a ton of guys right now that are in their, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth year that you could lean on and say, you know, like that's a building block moving forward. You've got guys like Shaq Mason, but when you look around the whole roster as a whole, clearly, you know, the lack of developing talent through the draft has caught up to this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, Trey Flowers is essentially the only one on the defensive side of the ball, because after that, it's the old guard. It's Dont'a Hightower. It's Devin McCourty. You bring in, you know, Stephon Gilmore, veteran players there. There aren't too many good young players on that defense. And, oh, yeah, Trey Flowers is going to be a free agent. And you're going to have to pay him. You're going to have to pay him a lot. When have the Patriots ever paid for anybody at that spot? Never. He's going to get paid by somebody, and I fear it's not going to be here. But eventually you got to pay somebody on defense, right? You paid Dont'a Hightower, but that was it. You didn't pay Malcolm Butler. You didn't pay Jamie Collins. You didn't pay Chandler Jones. You got to pay somebody eventually, right? Is it going to be Trey Flowers? I hope, because he's all you got left there.
And, you know, I wouldn't lump it in as saying they don't draft any skill players or they don't use any high draft picks on skill players, because obviously they drafted Sony Michel. Mm-hmm. I think he's worked out pretty well. You know, I think he's turned into what they thought he was going to be, or as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be a pretty good running back for them. So they did make an investment there. I give them credit for that. Let's talk about specifically what the caller was talking about, which is wide receiver. That's the skill position that they're not, when they draft them, they're not doing a good job of drafting them. And they're passing a lot of good players because they don't necessarily, it seems like, put a lot of value in that position high in the draft. And maybe it's because they've missed on some, or maybe they just think they can pick guys up off the scrap heap and coach them up. But, you know, that's something that traditionally they need to do a better job of both bringing in guys that are going to excel here, valuing them, and also, you know, just scouting them and getting it right in the draft.
Well, to your point, look, they've never taken a receiver in the first round under Bill Belichick since he's come to New England. And then the guys that they have taken relatively high, Chad Jackson, 12-year-old Tim was a big fan of that pick. It did not work out the way you thought it would. And Aaron Dobson more recently as well was a miss.
Yep.
You go through the draft, though, and I'm going to take a page out of Felger and Maz's book here because we're about to go through some of these drafts. And recently, it's not great. You go back to 2014, Dominic Easley was their first-round pick, right? That's a miss. Jimmy Garoppolo, a hit. He's no longer with the franchise, though, obviously. Brian Stork, out of the league. James White. That's a hit. So you got one in 2014 because after that, a bunch of garbage. 2015, Malcolm Brown's your first pick.
Oh.
Not great. Jordan Richards, your second round pick. Super Bowl hero.
Yuck.
Geno Grissom, and then Trey Flowers in the fourth round, which is a hit. Trey Jackson, miss, but then you've got Shaq Mason. So, you know, you walk away from the 2015 draft with two impact guys out of the fourth round. I would say that that's a pretty good draft. 2016, Cyrus Jones is your first pick. Joe Tooney is your second pick in the third round. Then Jacoby Brissett, Vincent Valentine, Malcolm Mitchell in the fourth round, who worked out that year, but ultimately a short career because of the knee. And then 2017, you know, you only make four picks. Derek Rivers in the third round, a guy that has been a healthy scratch pretty much all season for New England. Dietrich Wise, who's been a nice player for him, but ultimately he's got 3.5 sacks this season. Antonio Garcia never actually saw the field for New England. And then Connor McDermott in the sixth round, which is a throwaway. And then you've got this year with those guys. So, you know, you look at it just through the last few seasons and you can see why there's a lack of, you know, that middle ground of talent or middle-aged talent on this roster. It's because they haven't done a particularly great job of drafting. And it's something we haven't been used to, but some of these first-round picks and Dominic Easley, look, going into that draft, they said, you know, top 10 talent, but the injuries were a concern. And ultimately that's what was his undoing. But you've missed on some of those picks that, you know, in previous years you'd hit on.
So if you go through that again, they've missed on their top pick, whatever it was, be it the third round, you know, last year or 2 years ago with Cyrus Jones. They've essentially missed on their top pick dating back to 2013.
Jamie Collins was their first pick in 2013.
Right.
So
that was
pick.
The you last time it? you hit on a guy. And yeah. He's not here anymore.
Yep.
You shipped him out of town unceremoniously.
I'd say they hit on Sony Michel too. I think he's a pretty good player.
Right. Yeah. Although if you want to, you know, play by our game, your top pick, Isaiah Wynn, right, is on IR.
Yeah.
Let's play by our game here. Come on.
Yeah. Let's shape the narrative.
Yeah. No, exactly. What are you doing here, John? I get it.
He's still
you're
a high
writer,
draft pick. You know.
Yeah, I get it.
You want to give them some credit where it's due. I'm going to pat them on the back at least for that one. But like, I think the overwhelming preponderance of the evidence is they've missed on a lot of these picks. And whether it's them not scouting well enough, whether it's them thinking they're smarter than everybody else and, you know, trying to get high value with a guy that's undervalued for whatever reason, you know, they've done a lot of this stuff over the years and it's worked for them before, but it's not really working now. And, you know, just the frustrating part of watching the team is their inability to get wide receiver right.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what they do, whether they're bringing guys in that can't learn the offense, whether they, you know, don't value a guy like Brandon Cooks as much as they probably should to hold on to him, you know, there's a bunch of different things going on there. But it just seems like at the end of the day, they don't put enough value in the wide receiver position to bring in an elite guy that can work in the offense.
Yeah, and when you don't do that, you wind up making moves in the season, like taking, you know, rolling the dice on Josh Gordon and hoping it works out. And when it doesn't, now it looks like you might be, you know, receiver short when it comes to the playoff time. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see New England moving forward. And, again, the balancing act that goes into this now, because obviously you need to replenish the roster through the draft, but you're also ultimately going to have to use one of those high-round picks on your next quarterback too.
Yeah, so, but that takes time, though, because by 2014 they had a championship-quality defense. But that's because they hit on the drafts in 10, 11, and 12, where they got McCourty and Logan Ryan and, you know, Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower. Like, they rebuilt that defense, but it took them 3 years through the draft to do it. You don't have 3 years left with this team. By 3 years, I'm sorry, Tom Brady's gone in 3 years. You don't have that type of time.
It is funny when you go back to 2014 and they let Revis walk and everyone said, you know, we're letting Revis walk because we need to re-sign Jamie Collins. We need to re-sign, you know, Dante Hightower, Chandler Jones, all these guys. And now, you know, Dante Hightower is really the only guy left on that defense. Nonetheless, Bill Belichick, the man behind those drafts, he is stepping to the podium right now. Bill Belichick's press conference is powered by the Oakhurst Company, New England's premier technology and audiovisual solution provider for over 97 years. Visit Oakhurst.com, Oakhurst Technology for tomorrow. Let's go to Bill at the podium.
Okay. We're on to the Jets here. It's good to have a nice break yesterday, but looking forward to big matchup this week against New York, and certainly been impressive to watch since we played them. Darnold's really played well. He's got an excellent group of receivers, tight ends, backs to work with, and obviously Roberts. Leading in both punt and kickoff returns, had an explosive year, and did it again against the Packers last week. And defensively, again, well-coached team, created a lot of problems with their pressure. Corners done a good job for them. Good front seven. So it's been a big challenge for us, and we'll have to play better than we did in the last game. They're definitely better than they were when we saw them, whatever it was, 6 weeks ago. So that'll be our challenge to improve the matchup.
What is it about Darnold's game that stood out to you? It looks like last week was a really good week for him.
There's a couple of them now. Good decisions, accurate. It's probably better timing and execution in the passing game of his receivers. More yards, more touchdowns, fewer turnovers.
How does he benefit from his release? I'm just watching him briefly. Looks like he's like relatively quick release. Is the offense sort of set up to allow him to?
It's West Coast based, yeah. So it's a lot of That's the offense.
It seems like Chris Herndon's emerged for them over the last month or so. What about him? Makes him a tough cover.
Yeah. He sure has. He's, he's fast. He gets into the routes well. You can see his speed down the field is just moving about the same speed as the receivers are. So just on tape, he plays fast. Good vertical player. And gets across the field quickly on the over routes, things like that. So, yeah, it seems like there's certainly developing chemistry developing between Darnold and Herndon.
On the touchdown play to Anderson on the left side of the field, Darnold might have used his eyes a little bit, looked at the running back first in the flat, and then Anderson. Is that something that he's done repeatedly that you've seen or done more of lately to kind of manipulate the
play? About the first touchdown on the fake slip screen?
Yeah.
I mean, fake the slip screen out there, I think it was doing unwell. And it's kind of a 2-on-1 fast break there. Got to Anderson. Anderson cut it back. It was a well-designed play. So they beat him on the fake slip screen, and Anderson made a good run on it.
Is that something you noticed in terms of the eye usage, I guess, that play aside, just in terms of being able to manipulate defenders? Is that something that he does much of?
Yeah. Again, I wouldn't say that's really the heart of the offense. And the essence of the offense is to have a lot of moving routes, get the ball quickly to a player on the move, let him run with it. Whether it's inside out, outside in the seam, backs. So, and then I like to stand back there and work side to side on the field and spend all day in the pocket, and that's not really the way that offense is designed to run.
So you guys have either blocked or deflected 3 punts in the past 3 weeks. How much of a difference can those types of plays make in the game?
Yeah, those are big plays. We'll see how it goes. Look for those opportunities every week. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. Sometimes the opportunities are better to return. We'll just see how it plays out.
There was some dissatisfaction in the locker room in terms of how the special teams have been playing earlier in the year. Have you seen, obviously, the block punts, but in all areas, sort of an improvement in that
I think there's room for more improvement. We'll certainly get tested this week, so whatever it was or wasn't in the past, I don't think really makes too much difference. We're going up against the best return team in the league, so we'll see where we are against Roberts. It's not just him. I mean, obviously, they do a very good job blocking. Their kickoff return scheme is good. Punt returns. They do a good job of getting them started. They do a good job blocking. He does a good job of running. He's explosive. He doesn't need much space. Once he hits a seam, it's all over. So we'll find out where we are this week.
Bill, given that he missed 3-4 games in the middle of the year, is there value going further back, even though it's been a couple of months, to Sam Darnold's games in October and perhaps even September?
Yeah, we saw them all before we played them the first time.
Is this still relevant? You know, understanding there's obviously been 3 weeks that he's played leading up to Sunday, but you put much weight in that?
Yeah, well, again, we did that in the early part of the year, as we did everything else. There's some relevance to it, but I think there's more relevance to what's been happening, you know, in more recent weeks. But we did that in the first scouting report. And, some of the guys we looked at played. Some of them didn't. Some of the guys that we're playing now didn't play in the first game. So it's the way it usually is. So we've updated that. But, yeah, I think what they've done recently is the most relevant.
What would you attribute some of Michelle's success this year? It seems like he's just done a good job, you know, sporadically in spurts, some big production games. Obviously, he missed training camp, missed some games here and there, but when he's in there, he's been producing for you guys fairly regularly.
Well, one, he's a good back, he's a good player. Runs well, takes care of the ball. It's tough. He's got good playing strength. Runs through some arm tackles. Still got a lot to learn, still a lot of things that he can work on, but... And it's a tough kid. He's smart. He works hard. He's out there every day. So keeps getting better. It's a good thing.
Well, you've seen a lot of running backs go through that process, especially when they're rookies coming along. How long does it take a player to gain confidence in himself so that what he's doing later in the season obviously shows a curve upward in what he's accomplishing?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think each player is different. Each situation is different. I don't know if there's one set standard. You know, we've had guys on our team that at that position that didn't play at all as rookies that have been very productive and good players for us. Other guys played as rookies and they played less as it went along. So, I don't know. Just keep grinding it out day by day, week by week, and see where it goes. So, just take it one day at a time.
Dante Hightower's been pretty consistent all year. Was there a point during the season where he kind of hit his stride coming off of last year's injury?
You know, he's had a good year. He's had a good spring, good training camp. I missed the first Buffalo game, but he's missed very few snaps all year in practice and games. He plays in different packages. And, you know, we haven't put him out there for every snap, but he's held up well and played well. I think he's, you know, gotten in on a lot of plays in the running game, in the passing game, rushing the passer, some coverage plays, pursuit plays, things like that. So yeah, he's done a solid job for us.
What stands out to you
about has he? Has he had a good year? I don't know. Dante Hightower, really? I'm not so sure about that. There you go. Fired up, Bill Belichick. Addressing the media here.
Seemed a little tired. Like maybe he had too much eggnog yesterday.
Exactly.
Had a nice turkey dinner that he's still struggling against the tryptophan, maybe.
Scott Zolak, Mark Bertrand, Zoe, and the Beatle. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using the promo code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.